This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. It's time to go on the money with Chris DeSimeo.
Stocks finally broke out of their slump last week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gaining over 200 points on Thursday. The rally started after the noon hour began when the Federal Reserve announced that it would be buying over about $40 billion a month with no end in sight of mortgage-backed securities. That was exactly the kind of medicine that investors had been praying for. The Dow gained again over 200 points on Thursday. And yesterday, after better-than-expected consumer sentiment figures were released, they were off to the races again. Well, speaking of off to the races, it's fun to always visit with one of our favorite stock jockeys, Mr. John Bolling. John is the retired founder of Bolling Portfolio Management, a degree in law from the University of Cincinnati, and about 50 years now in the money management business. And John, joining us all the way from Naples, Florida. John, thanks so much for checking in with us.
It's great to be here, Chris.
John, given the Fed's announcement on Thursday, what should investors be contemplating?
Well, they should be contemplating that interest rates are going to remain low for years into the future, apparently at least into the year 2015. And the outlook for the stock market looks exceedingly good. And for bond market, it's just continued low interest rates. And I think investors should be careful not to invest in long bonds, because sooner or later this somewhat artificial jubilance is going to subside.
Yes.
And that will be about the time, apparently, with the Fed is using the economic theories of the fellow from Columbia University, Michael Woodford, I think his name is. And under his pattern, it would be that the Fed, when the employment rate gets down around 7%, the unemployment rate, gets down to 7%, why they'll start cutting back on the force-feeding of the economy.
Start reeling it in, so to speak. You know, John, over the years that you wrote a quarterly newsletter for your clients, you you actually earned the nickname the Bard of Hyde Park, because you would almost always start out with a quote from Shakespeare. And as the Fed made the announcement yesterday, I was wondering, and you're the perfect person to ask, was yesterday's announcement, if Shakespeare could write about this, would he have called it a mid or perhaps a late summer night's dream, As You Like It, or Much Ado About Nothing? Which one is it?
Probably The Tempest.
The Tempest.
we're in a new world of sorts. And gosh knows how all this will work out. You know, when the Fed devises the mortgage-backed securities, why, they're releasing cash, obviously. And that stimulates the economy. And the problem's going to be when they try to unwind all this stuff, can they do so without setting off severe problems?
A tempest.
Yeah, a tempest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another quotation that popped into my mind, and I'm not quite sure, but it keeps popping in.
Please, let it pop. Let it pop out.
Bend not thy neck to fortune's yoke, but still let thy dauntless mind stride unimpeded through all mischance.
Wow.
Now, don't be an ox, you know, bearing loads under a yoke, but let thy dauntless mind stride unimpeded through all mischance.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what investors do in situations like this, except I think you can rely pretty much on stocks doing fairly well, on inflation sooner or later popping up its ugly head. But for the time being, you can't really take the risk of being in long bonds, and you don't get any rate of return on short-term stuff. So the generalized advice I would proffer would be to buy rather higher-yielding stocks.
Mm-hmm.
That way you get some income. The problem is a lot of retired people who are used to having their money in bank accounts or CDs and living off the interest, and you can't do that anymore.
Right, right.
That's really harmful.
Yeah, the game has changed. And, of course, over the years, you carved out a reputation as being an expert in the world of something called closed-end funds. These are mutual funds that issue a set number of shares instead of constantly raising money, and most of them trade on an exchange. And because there are a fixed number of shares that are being managed by these portfolio managers, these were the early prototype, proto-exchange traded funds. Sometimes these things would trade for less than their net asset value, and sometimes they'd trade at a premium for more than what they're intrinsically they intrinsically were worth. Is it still possible for the average investor to find good, high-quality equity portfolios that are trading on an exchange for less than their intrinsic value?
Yeah. They're in the Wall Street Journal every Monday. They're in Barron's. And you can look these things up in Barron's in the index in there under the heading of closed-end funds. And you can go and there must be a couple hundred of these things. There's a long listing. And there's bond funds and municipal bond funds and stock funds and all kinds of hybrid funds. But these things, you really have to get into them in some detail if you're going to buy them. And I really think this is an area where an investor ought to seek advice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Probably I should say that all the time. Investors should seek advice. But on a closed-end fund, you have funds that leverage themselves and are therefore quite risky. In other words, they borrow a whole lot of money or they issue preferred stock in addition to the common stock. And there are funds that have high expenses and funds with low expenses. It's a jungle out there.
Yeah, there are some of these income funds, John, that own an asset. Just name any asset such as a typical kind of bond.
Mm-hmm.
And you would compare the two side by side, and one has a yield that's 20 or 30% higher than the other, even though they're both owning the same things. And typically that's the first clue that the fund paying out the higher number is borrowing money and then going out and buying more assets to kind of goose the yield a little bit. What's the big risk in something like that?
Well, the big risk is that interest rates go up and they no longer can borrow so cheaply. And that's one big risk. Another big, there's always risks in leverage because at some point you might want to pay the money back for a million reasons. And when you do so, you have to sell assets. And sometimes these assets are not particularly liquid. And when everything goes bad, what you used to be able to sell, you may not be able to sell anymore in quantity. And since these funds are quite large and their positions usually are several million dollars, although that varies quite a bit, but they'll have positions that are quite sizable, and they may not be able to get a reasonable price in very adverse circumstances.
Okay. John, we got about a minute and 20 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
You have done a lot of work looking at these oil energy infrastructure master limited partnerships, some of which trade on the exchange, without naming names, without naming individual names. What are the kinds of things that investors should be looking at, if they should be looking at these things at all? Is it too late to get into the sector? And if someone still wants to put fresh cash to work, what should they be looking for?
First of all, I'd look at the pipeline area, which is by far the safest area for the master limited partnerships. The companies that have natural gas and oil and refined products pipelines going all over the place, they have a what you call a moat these days. They, in other words, they're if you have the pipeline that's going into Las Vegas and it's adequately supplying the place, nobody can build a parallel pipeline because of the regulatory people. So that you have a quasi-monopoly, and you're also you got a toll road there. Anybody that wants to ship gas or oil or what have you through one of your pipelines pays you for the privilege of shipping the stuff. In other words, you don't own the commodity usually.
Yeah, they have to pay the piper. So,
yeah,
pay
and
the pipeline.
So these things have really good yields. If you wanted, you could find something that's quite reasonable and so forth with a yield of 6 or 7%, even higher if you want to get real close about it. But also you have, in some cases, very well-defined growth. There's a tremendous need for new pipelines. They're finding shale gas and shale-type oil all over the place so fast that there aren't pipelines in a lot of these areas, and they have to shipping stuff out by truck and by rail, which is very high price shipping compared to a pipeline.
Wow.
The growth is pretty bright for several years into the future for these guys.
Yeah, opportunity abounds. Well, John, I want to thank you so much for taking part of your weekend to be with us.
Well, I'm very happy to do it, Chris.
John Bowling from the Bowling Portfolio Management, and for Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimio on The Money.